This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome Anatol Levin of the Quincy Institute. He is in the Middle East. He's in the Gulf, commenting on events north of him along the Russian frontier from the Baltic states all the way to Afghanistan. We're going to start with Belarus, however. Anatol is the author of the forthcoming updated version of his book, Climate Change and the Nation State. Right now, we're applying ourselves to the nation state in all climates because of the Belarus incident of some days past, in which a private aircraft, Ryanair, was either deceived or obliged to land in Minsk, at which time Minsk authorities took into custody a Belarusian citizen who's been living in exile. His name is Protasevich, and his colleague, Sofia Sapega, a Russian national, have held them ever since on the large accusation of dissidence, or what you'd have to say at this point was a rejection of the Belarusian state. Belarus has been troubled since the elections of the middle of 20 during the worst of the pandemic, because the winner of that election, according to the critics, was deprived of the correct count. The winner is now in exile, and the longtime leader of Belarus, this is a nation of about 10 million people, Lukashenko, remains in strong power. However, that was the original event. Since then, there have been a number. So, Anatol, a very good day to you. I want to recover your thoughts of a week past, because you published right away what the NATO and the U.S. and allies should do, as opposed to what we now know they have done. And the first point you make is salient to me. You reminded all of us of a previous incident in which the U.S. had obliged the landing of an aircraft carrying Evo Morales, the longtime leader of Ecuador, who is remaining a constant bar in the side of the U.S. But at that point, the accusation or the allegation or the suspicion was that aircraft was carrying Edward Snowden, the fugitive compromiser of U.S. intelligence. That was not true, but you established the fact that that is a precedent and that the U.S. should be careful about establishing such precedents. To your knowledge, has the U.S. responded to that criticism? Has Moscow or Minsk pressed that fact? Good day to you.
Hello, John. Nice to be back with you again. Well, Moscow and Minsk have certainly raised it again and again, but the United States has not responded, I think because they prefer everyone to forget about it, and it hasn't been, you know, nearly sufficiently mentioned in the Western media. But, for me, I mean, neither of these actions, neither the American one 7 years ago nor the Belarusian one, are justified. They are illegal, and they are very, you know, they are potentially, if this becomes a pattern, very disruptive to international air travel. But, it is a reminder that if the United States believes in a rules-based order in the world, it shouldn't break those rules itself, or other people will see a green light to do so. That's true not just in, of course, in this case, but in many others as well.
We have a confrontation between Washington and Moscow developing very quickly over the Belarus affair. And again, you have recommendations that have not been acted upon, but it's important to remind all of us that these are potential exits for the conflict right now, leading toward the first meeting of the two presidents, President Putin and President Biden, and which the Belarus question will be front and center because it's been in constant headlines ever since. The first warning you mention is that Belarus is a red line for Moscow in similar fashion to Ukraine. What does that mean, a red line? And has Washington paid attention to that possibility of disaster?
seen from Moscow, Russia's red line is very like America's red line in Central America, which is to say that Russia does not want to, you know, control everything on the ground. It doesn't want to rule these places directly, but it will not permit, or it will do everything possible to prevent them becoming allies of a potentially hostile great power. As we know, when the Soviet Union tried to extend its influence in Central America, the United States reacted with, you know, extreme ruthlessness and backed some very, very nasty regimes in the region to stop that. Because, and I'm not blaming the United States for this, you know, America regards Central America is absolutely vital to U.S. security. Well, Russia does the same in Belarus and Ukraine. And so for me, what the West should be trying to do is to support as best it can reform and democratization in Ukraine and Belarus, but without directly challenging Russian security interests by promising or offering to turn these countries into Western allies, because Russia will respond to that. Russia has shown in Ukraine, in Georgia, that if necessary, it will fight on its own borders. And we have shown in Georgia in 2008 and Ukraine in 2014 that we will not fight. We won't go to war with Russia on its own borders, because, of course, it would be an absolutely insane thing for the West to do. So I think we also have to keep that in mind. I mean, don't do anything which will provoke a conflict which we would not, in fact, win.
Recognizing also, you recognize that Minsk and Moscow are intertwined. I like the detail that the border of Belarus is 300 miles from Moscow. Good heavens, that's a few hours' drive. So what we're looking at here is something that is critical for Moscow, critical for Vladimir Putin. I also see in your presentation that we need to recognize that Belarus is a nation divided, similar to Ukraine, a Poland-facing side and a Russian-facing side. How does that complicate matters in dealing with Belarus and Putin and Lukashenko?
Well, I mean, hopefully in an ideal world, and of course we don't live in an ideal world, you know, both sides of the country, you know, would come together behind an agenda of reform, while, you know, not turning either fully to Moscow or towards the West. Because Lukashenko, it should be noted, I mean, Lukashenko and Putin are not personal friends, and Lukashenko has defied Putin, you know, on many occasions. He's not simply Putin's puppet, and Belarus is not simply a Russian client state. But my fear is, you know, as we found in Iraq, as we found in Libya, as we found in Ukraine, that if the present regime in Belarus falls, or at least if it falls in a way that is seen to be, you know, promoted by the West against Russia, all the old fault lines in these countries, once the regime fell or was overthrown by the West, all these old fault lines broke out again. And in the most extreme cases, of course, led to civil war. This is my fear, because, of course, the other thing is, as we know, that it's very easy to have the appearance of a united, you know, opposition to an unpopular government. But when that government goes, it often turns out that the opposition is not so united at all, and immediately, you know, starts fighting amongst itself for supremacy. And I really think that Belarus is too divided a society for us to be able to, you know, engage in this kind of very ambitious and optimistic attempts at Western-led democratization. We should be cautious.
The European capitals have condemned the Belarusian action uniformly, and Prime Minister Boris Johnson most recently condemning it in person after his Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab condemned it. The puzzle here is, does Europe, because it's closer, and does the United States and Europe in conversation, to your knowledge, do they collectively have a plan in the event that Lukashenko does depart? Is there a day two?
Well, no, I don't think that they do. And my fear is, therefore, that they will simply go into default mode, which is to support anti-Russian agendas, to support whatever politicians there are in Belarus who seem to be most anti-Russian, and, of course, who will talk the biggest talk about democracy and reform. And that precisely because they don't have a plan, they'll essentially go on to autopilot with potentially disastrous results, or at least disastrous results for Belarus, because, of course, you know, in the end, it won't be the West that will suffer. It'll be the unfortunate people on the ground. You know, as I say, NATO has no intention of fighting Russia in Belarus, and the European Union has no intention of spending a lot of money on Belarus either.
In other words, you're proposing that what happens on day two is Ukraine updated. It's a Ukraine event all over again. Separatism, civil war, conflict, breakdown, and an exasperated public either emigrating to Russia and Poland or wanting to. So what we'd have is another Ukraine. Is that correct?
That's what I'm afraid of, yes.
And in the event we have another Ukraine, we have double the threat to Russia and double the threat to NATO. So I think we should turn to NATO next. The meetings of ministers virtually have set up meetings that are going forward, anticipating the summit in Geneva in the middle of this month. I'm speaking with Anatole Levin. He is the Quincy Institute, but most importantly, the author of the forthcoming reissue, The Updating Climate Change in the Nation State. This is CBS Eye on the World. We're headed to Brussels and NATO. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.